My name is Michael Schaefer. I'm affiliated with Arizona State University. Pleased to provide update on a little pilot project and some preliminary data that we've begun to collect on a consumer-operated program. Neither myself nor any of our co-presenters have, co-authors have any financial disclosures regarding our project. Our presentation will be structured around is provide some definitional boundaries of this term consumer-operated programs, describe our methodology and implementation of our study, discuss some of the emergent findings from this to date, and describe some of our next steps with our data. If we look at the literature on consumer-operated programs, and in the 21st century we refer to consumer-operated programs, in the 20th century we talked about drop-in centers, clubhouses, as typified by the International Center for Clubhouse Development, et cetera. And I think this broadening of terminology to consumer-operated programs, reflective of, I think, some of the perhaps lack of willingness on the part of state mental health authorities and others to adhere to the standards of clubhouse operations. But these four features we see fairly consistent, and it's an interesting synergy between this presentation and the preceding presentation on this topic. But as we look at consumer-operated programs, core features of independence from existing health and behavioral health providers, autonomousness and accountability, consumer control, that typically we will see this minimum standard that at least 51% of the members of the board of directors for a consumer-operated program have to be disclosed. Primary service recipients or consumers, and that these programs are staffed, if not entirely, then a majority by individuals who are themselves current or previous service recipients. We find within consumer-operated programs a variety of functions and processes, as we saw from the previous presentation from the previous panel, this role of advocacy being core to what we see in peer-run and consumer-operated services, facilitating mutual aid and mutual support between the member staff and the member recipients. This concept, and something that we see in clubhouses pronounced very strongly, very consistent with what we'll see in the therapeutic community literature over in the substance abuse arena, is a sense of building of community. And more recently, in the last 10 to 15 years, a more articulated, more formalized role of consumer-operated programs providing direct services and as described reimbursable services. These centers may provide any one of a mix of different kind of programmatic aspects, a drop-in center that might also have a washer and dryer, showering facilities, et cetera, reflective of individuals who may be homeless or housing transitioned, structured educational and support groups, artistic expressive experiences, peer counseling, benefit eligibility assessment, benefit counseling. In Phoenix, we actually have a contracted crisis respite provider that is entirely peer-staffed, and some pretty good literature in that area, nascent literature on the efficacy of peer-staffed crisis services. The evidence for consumer-operated programs is relatively shallow. relative to other evidence-based practices, the Janos article perhaps being the strongest piece of literature that we've been able to identify, but identifying these outcomes for individuals who were attending consumer-operated programs, the utilization of problem-centered coping skills, more coping strategies by individuals participating in consumer-operated programs, achieving higher scores in social functioning, achieving more education, and more expressed hopefulness and self-efficacy and patient activation than individuals not attending consumer-operated programs. Again, the notion that higher participation in such programs will lead to a greater sense of well-being, and these positive effects do not appear to be limited to any one particular program. So the fidelity, if you will, of consumer-operated programs is one of the elephants in the room right now. What does that fidelity look like, and is there evidence corresponding fidelity to outcomes? We were approached 2 years ago by a consumer-operated program known as STAR, not the STAR that Dan Fisher talked about in the last break. This is a program that was actually initiated by former patients of our county state psychiatric hospital that initially set up operations in an old staff residence on the grounds of our county hospital complex. They were incorporated in 1986. They purchased their first property in 1988 with some support from a charitable trust in Phoenix known as St. Luke's and a large behavioral health provider in Phoenix called Triple R. They now operate three locations, and like one of the speakers in our previous talk, this is an agency that has grown over the last 3 years, 4 years, from a budget of maybe $50,000 to $100,000 to $1.5 million a year. And so I think one of the challenges that STAR and I think many consumer-operated programs face as they continue to see the growth is how they build the programmatic and administrative infrastructure in the face of that type of rapid growth. We were approached by Suzanne Legander, who's one of our co-authors for this paper, and offered to contract with us to help begin to develop some outcome metrics for her program. And her impetus, Suzanne's impetus, was that the funder, our what's known as Regional Behavioral Health Authority in Arizona, was beating her around the head, not because it's Magellan, but I think most REBAs, with why should we be giving you this much money and what you have to show for it. And so Suzanne was very much in the need of being able to capture some data, that some information that she could take back to her funder to say, this is a good return on your investment. And so we began a process with Suzanne and her members and her senior team on developing a evaluation model that was not overly onerous, was a bottom-up approach, that we were addressing questions that were relevant to the members and relevant to Suzanne, and went through this six-stage process, which culminated in the development of a couple of Scantron self-report measures that we developed. The kinds of questions that Suzanne and her leadership team wanted to get a handle on are, what are the characteristics of the people who are coming to our program? What kind of services are they utilizing, and how often and how much are they utilizing that? How satisfied are they with those services? What kinds of outcomes do these members report as a result of participating in the program? Are there differences that we can detect in those outcomes based upon participant characteristics, and are services related to the outcomes? These kinds of questions, not surprisingly, are the same type of questions any other program administrator would want to ask, and I think that's an important point is that when you begin from the bottom up, from the ground up of a consumer-operated approach to evaluation, you will typically end up with very similar to questions that you might from the top down that an academic like myself might come up with. What we've created with STAR is a anonymous and confidential self-report survey administered by member staff of the STAR program. There are two questionnaires that we've created, one that we refer to as the PRCIQ, the intake questionnaire. That is, member staff will attempt to administer that questionnaire to every member on their first visit or within their first week or two of participating in the STAR. And that will give more historical information and demographic information. Second, we will administer, or their staff will administer at that same time, the what we've called the PRCQQ, a quarterly questionnaire, and that gets at more time-specific kind of processes and activities. That quarterly questionnaire then being readministered every 90 days in the program. One of the things we've created for the STAR staff are some procedures on how to keep track of who's in the program and a little Excel tickler program so that they can enter the intake date and then get a auto reminder once a week of who are the members they need to be looking out for this week. Two slides on that one. So very quickly, some of the univariate analysis that we've identified, the demographic characteristics, 66% of the individuals being white, not unlike what we see in most of the mental health service access in the Phoenix area, which is very unlike what the ethnic racial makeup is of Phoenix, which shows a much stronger representation of Latinos. 10% vets, about 50% of the participants being women. Attendance in college, this is a fairly well educated population, 38% of these members having some college, nearly 20% having a baccalaureate degree or higher. Diagnostic labels and individuals, again, self-reporting and able to report as many of these as was appropriate. Mood disorder prevailing at 73%, not inconsistent with what we see in our behavioral health system in Maricopa County. About 55% self-identifying as experiencing a psychotic disorder. Nearly 90% of this population have been hospitalized at least once. 65% self-reporting at least one suicide attempt, a fairly high level of involvement in the criminal justice system. And as we look at the relative self-reported rates of hospitalization and suicide, we were stunned, quite frankly, by the relative high prevalence of suicide, with 24%, quarter of our population, reporting four or more lifetime suicide attempts. So fairly high utilizing, high acute population. Individuals' self-reported length of participation in the STAR program, 37% reporting they've been attending STAR for 2 years or more. That's in part an artifact of how we jump-started our data collection processes. As we continue data collection, we see that proportional representation of the long-term members beginning to peter out. Here are some of our first cut data on relative changes baseline intake to first quarterly follow-up, showing significant reductions in psychiatric hospitalization and psychiatric crisis service utilization. No impact at all in medical hospitalization, and a slight but non-significant tick up in both homelessness and, or excuse me, in violent crime victimization. With regard to employment and education, showing some modest declination in employment, concomitant with some slight increases in GED participation and job training participation. Some of the lessons that we've learned through this process are the challenges around the quarterly follow-ups and setting up systems that are easy and available for a member-run organization to operate in terms of quarterly follow-ups, training staff on appropriate administration, the staff being member staff on the administration, and existing initial membership information, again, our initial jump start, if you will, on data collection, a representation of some of those longer-term members. As Suzanne would describe, and Suzanne Legander being the executive director for STAR, she characterizes the things that she's seen as a result of this program around the impacts that it's created for the member, impacts that it's created for the program, and impacts that it's created for the community. While no causative association could be drawn, Suzanne claims as a result of our first annual report to her, she was able to establish a contract with Cigna Health Insurance. And it served the purpose that Suzanne was looking for, which was, how can I justify my program and how can I use that justification to begin to broaden and diversify my funding streams. Some of our next steps, we're in the process of making some revisions on the instrumentation. Some of the items that we had initially worked on really didn't work out well. As we talk more to the member and the member leadership, there are changes they're wanting to see driven on that. Moving toward a Spanish version, and beginning to look at, are there other consumer-operated programs in Arizona or elsewhere that are interested in participating in this data collection process. Lastly, negotiating with our state mental health authority to see if we can't get encounter claim data from the mental health system that we can correspond to the self-report data. Questions, or are we going to flip to questions now or later?
I have questions now.
Thank you. Yes?
I want to ask you about your feelings about what struck me as an interesting contrast. I know a little bit about, for example, the supportive employment model and mental health, and about the PACT model. And in both of those models, one of the sort of key elements of fidelity to the program model is integration. And sort of collaboration among all the team members. And I was struck by the fact that one of the first bulletins you had up there for consumer-operated programs was independence. And I'm wondering whether that issue of sort of, in some sense, integration or at least interaction with the other professional, other support programs has come up in this environment.
It has, and not in specific reference to the project, but I think one of the real challenges that I think we as a field have got to continue to struggle with as we look toward consumer-operated programs and peer support services is the same discussion we were having on the last session of this inside the system, outside the system, that as I listen to survivors and individuals running consumer-operated programs, maintaining a bright line distinction between peer-run services, not peer staff services, because one of the things we see in a lot of our providers in Arizona are providers that are hiring peers to work within their system. And I think the consumer-operated program movement, maintaining a bit of a bright line, if you will, between their independence and autonomy as a peer-run entity, separate from but parallel to the program. How that shakes out in the end, I'm not clear, because I do think that the issue of integration is a tangible one. Yes?
In your graph for demographics, I didn't see where you compared and contrast rural to urban, but I assume that because all your STAR participants based on the U.S. Census are in an urban
area? This is Maricopa County, yeah. So it's Maricopa, Phoenix. It's about it's a large urban study. Yes? Is it what? Absolutely. In fact, I thought about and didn't bring with me copies of our Scantron form. So let's trade business cards and I'll we'll send you.
And I have another
question.
This is my question. I'm wondering if it's okay to comment on it. What the relationship is of STARS to Recovery Innovations?
I wouldn't say they're competitors. But they are two separate organizations operating in Maricopa County, along with CHEERS, and I think there's at least one or two other peer-run organizations, consumer-run organizations in greater Maricopa County.
I'm so glad to hear that there's a consumer-operated community there that's offering those services.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Thank you much.
Thank you.